Said runes, gave him the prunes, and casting them took lots of skill. Hello and welcome to episode 189 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other Satanists as masterpieces. I am Nick, I am the, basically the inserted American of this podcast, and I'm joined as ever by Roger.
Oh, I get to have the really cool facial hair.
And we are...
Before we start, I would just like to say, because I keep forgetting to say hello to us, our massive Swedish fandom.
Oh yes, hello.
It was good to meet you.
Is it still fandom if it's one person? We are discussing, and the only way I knew about this film previously, it's from that snippet of science fiction from the Rocky Horror Picture Show that I sang at the beginning badly. We are talking about 1957, Night of the Demon, or Curse of the Demon, if you prefer, but we don't, so we'll call it Night of the Demon.
There's a history in that, yeah.
It's not our first film by this director. This is Jacques Tourneur.
And largely, I think, the same crew he'd been working with since Cat People in 1942.
Cat People, which we were big fans of, as I recall.
Also, of course, we've seen Dana Andrews before in Laura from 1944.
Yes, he was the cynical cop who fell for, well, spoilers for Laura, but I won't say any more. But it's very
he fell for the painting, that's not a spoiler.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You should watch that film. It's very good. You should watch both those films. They're both some of our favourites.
And the film is adapted from a story from an author I think reasonably dear to our hearts, M.R. James.
Yes. Yes. More beloved usually of kind of Christmas TV adaptations, but in this case a full-length film. I don't know if there's been many other full-length films of his works. None spring to mind, but...
I think even this one is stretching the material a bit, and with modern longer films, I think it would be harder to make it work.
Well, I like M.R. James, but they're often a bit samey.
Yeah, but also they are short stories. So,
but they are short stories. Yes, but here is unfortunately the version I watched of this was colourised, and it was colourised really distractingly badly. But I couldn't find a version in black and white. But
you can just turn down the saturation on many media players.
Oh, you see, I should have watched it on.
That's what I ended up doing with Nosferatu.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yes, I should have thought of that. Didn't though. So I was distracted by the awful colorization. But otherwise, we have a horror film in the style. Well, I thought it was going to be more of a sort of Hammer horror style. It isn't. If it has a style, it's perhaps more like Universal.
Well, yeah. This is where we get the production disagreements. So basically, Tourneur and the scriptwriter want to do it ambiguously Cat People style. You know, yes, people are dying, but maybe it could be of an actual accident.
Yes, even in Cat People, it's really not right until the end. And even then, where you're even 100% sure it's not just psychological. I have to say, I agree, they should have done that.
Hal Chester, one of the producers, felt very strongly that, no, you've got to put the demon on the screen.
Yes, so consequently we have this is a story of satanic rites and the summoning of a demon, and we have the demon appears within the first 10 minutes of the film, and it's for the standards of the time, it's pretty good. I find it, it's sort of a canine-like bulky creature with quite good, again, for the standards of the time, animation. I don't know if that was, it's stop motion, I assume, but it's quite well done. But it's still obviously...
The thing that threw me somewhat, I love the ominous smoke clouds. And yes. I love the demon when it's up close, but when the demon's in the distance, that just didn't really work as well for me.
Yes. And what Tourneur Tourneur, and the writer want Tourneur. Tourneur. Wanted was just not to show the demon, just to basically, maybe you see the smoke cloud, I don't know quite what they had in mind, but then you find the mangled body afterwards. And that would have been scarier to me. It would have been better. But maybe audiences would disagree. I don't know, because the kind of one of the iconic images from this film is the demon's face. So maybe, but I agree. It would have been better because the rest of the film, I feel, plays with it so masterfully.
Mm.
Honestly, that it would have worked better without that. But there we go. Because it has really, it's actually perhaps not a surprise with this director, but it's actually got some quite interesting things to say about magic and how it might work and what it even means. I think it's quite well done. Anyway.
But we start with Professor Harrington.
Yes, begging Dr. Julian Carswell to take back the curse, what he'd done on him. And if he does, then he'll stop looking into the kind of Satan cult that Harrington is in charge of. There is some discussion about a parchment that's been destroyed. Carswell says he'll do what he can, but presumably it's not very much because almost immediately Harrington's on the way home.
This is one of the first... this is Neil McGuinness, whom I haven't seen in other things.
He's
in that sort of facial hair, which makes it very obvious what the shape of his face is.
yes.
Which is perfect for this guy.
Yes.
And he's living with his mum.
yes.
And it's clear that once he realises the parchment has been destroyed, his first priority is, I've got to get this guy out of my house now. Exactly.
So he probably can't do anything, and two, a demon's going to come and rip him apart, and I don't want to be anywhere near this guy when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite nice that it's really, again, straight away he's not sort of a cackling evil villain. He's a kind of a pragmatist. He's like, okay, what do I do now? It's well done. I don't know if that first meeting quite impressed you, but retrospectively, you can see the kind of character he is straight away.
He's not a good guy, but I could see him as a player character.
That's we'll come on to him more in detail, because I think he is one of the finest villains we've had in Ribbon of Memes. I think he's great, but we'll come on to him.
Lucky in Constellation. The Rogers in the audience can now go back to sleep. all right. It's not that it makes any film better, because there are a lot of them appearing in really rubbish films, but it's good to see him anyway.
Yes, absolutely. We have Dana Andrews turn up. He is the... I'm assuming in the film... in the story, this is not an American academic that's flying over.
Yeah, also there's no daughter.
Dana Andrews is, I don't know, I was so distracted by his colourisation, but there's some sort of light comedy on the plane, which ably demonstrates that Dana Andrews wasn't very good at comedy, I think. He meets a girl on the plane who obviously is going to turn out to be some sort of love interest. He is...
This is where I first start to make a certain connection, which I will explain later, and I'm interested if you made the same one.
Okay. He is an academic, on a sort of an expert in the occult. He's coming to a convention, and it's the convention that Harrington was going to go to and expose this satanic cult,
mm-hmm.
which he will no longer be there, because he's been ripped to pieces by a demon.
To be fair, he's not been ripped to pieces by a demon. He has crashed into power lines.
Yes, which somehow shredded him. But yes, he was accidentally electrocuted. And again, if we hadn't seen the demon, that would have been nice to piece together the kind of, okay, if he's electrocuted, what were all these wounds on him, and wonder what was it. But we already know what's happened, which has kind of spoiled the build-up that I think the director was going for. But there we are. Dana Andrews, I loved him in Laura. I love him less here, because he seemed like a cynical cop. He doesn't seem to me like much of a world-renowned academic. Mm. What he seems is an American star that's been parachuted into a film to increase the interest of the film.
Well, probably also to get the American funding.
Yes, exactly. Yes, so I understand why it happened.
Also, it's a very flimsy excuse for him to get his top off.
yes. Thankfully, that was badly colourised too, so I couldn't make out what was going on with him.
He meets his colleagues and, oh my goodness, the brown face.
Oh God, we have an incredibly 1957 Indian gentleman. I'm assuming he's not actually Indian, is he? He's
played
white
by
guy.
Peter Elliott, who is sufficiently non-notable as not to have a Wikipedia page.
But well, okay. But he is.
But the thing is, there is nothing about the character that requires him to be. It's, I mean, he's just delivering information. He could have been another English occultist.
Oh, he's literally a bit of colour.
They may have thought they were being inclusive by putting him in. That's the worrying thought.
I mean, yeah, if you're going to do that, maybe anyway, doesn't matter. But maybe actually using an ethnic Indian would have worked. We get some bit about folklore. Do we learn about the Castonic guy at this point? I'm not sure.
Basically the only link, and it's a pretty tenuous link, is a man suspected of murder who has gone into Catatonia.
Then we have a lovely scene in the British Museum. As it's called. It looks like the British Library to me, but there we go.
Yes, it is the British Library Reading Room, which is at the time in the British Museum.
Okay, well, there we go. Good. Okay, well, I stand corrected. It's lovely, though, because we get to see the outside of the British Museum, and I can be like, oh, I've been there. That's cool.
It was a lovely room. It is. I mean, I can understand why they had to move and all the rest of it, but it is a great shame that it is not as it was.
Hmm. Yes, I've never been to the British Library as it is now. This is where Carswell pops up again.
Because Holden is requesting various rare books, and one of them is missing. And Carswell says, "Oh, I got a copy of that. I'll lend you mine."
Yes, and he slips something in with it. But then he sort of openly admits that he's.
He doesn't have the book with him, but he slips a paper in with something else.
Oh yes, so he slips him a runic symbol, and unbeknownst to him, this has now cursed Dana Andrews, because once you've been handed and accepted, if you've been handed it unknowingly, that marks you as the demon. Now you can, it will then attempt to destroy itself, this rune, apparently, and this is all found out later, but if you can slip it back to the person without them knowing, the demon will target them instead.
But basically, the demon is going to go after somebody.
Yes, yeah. Once you've done it, it's coming. And he's got 3 days. So Carswell basically invites him to his mansion to show him the book. Yeah. I think that's what happens.
Well, next we've got Harrington's funeral because Dana has to meet Jana, I think.
Oh, yes. And she's the one who either explains to him what the rune might have done, or it's in Harrington's diary, or something like that.
Played by Peggy Cummins, whom I haven't seen before, but honestly, I think she does a better job than Andrews here.
She's livelier. She is better at exposition. Yes, I agree. The letdown of this film for me is Dana Andrews. We then go to one of my favourite parts of the film, which is when Andrews visits the estate of Dr. Julian Carswell, and he straight away it kind of subverts what you're expecting. He's hosting a fete for the village children. He's a clown.
Obviously, you're wrong.
Well, that's what you. So he's a clown and he's entertaining the kids, but he's not a creepy clown. He's actually genuinely quite funny and avuncular and quite open, and he's definitely charismatic. And slightly under the thumb of his mum. And it's just, he's a really human character, in that he's obviously vain and greedy and, slightly arrogant, but he's also realistic. I really like this bit because you're just not expecting this kind of quite nice guy, And then there's no moment where he's sort of, ah-ha-ha, now I'm a cackling villain. He sort of gets more serious, and they start to talk about magic. And he, Andrew's very suspicious of him. And they start to talk about the kind of process of magic and how it works. And Carswell summons, so he says, a windstorm. And it's quite frightening, but he's quite sort of honest about it and what he's doing. But again, if we hadn't seen the demon at the beginning, it's done in such a way that it could just be coincidence. Like maybe he knew there was a windstorm on the way and he's
going to... Yeah, he doesn't say, aha, now I'm going to summon a windstorm. The storm starts to blow off and he says, aha, I'm summoning it.
Yes, exactly. So it's, you know, you can... It's really well done. I like the character of Carswell because, you know, I don't know, you just sort of... You get where he's coming from, really. He's just kind of being honest about who he is. It's nicely done. So that was, for me, was when it really won me over, because I really like Julian Carswell, the character.
Yeah, though, meanwhile, our hero is increasingly reminding me of Larry Talbot in The Wolfman.
Yes, exactly. A crowbarred in... Not brilliant actor.
Also, I don't care whom I offend. I'm a white man.
God, the Lon Chaney Jr. was way creepier though with his telescope. But I
agree. Also, he doesn't take off his hat when he enters the hotel.
What a bastard! But I agree, and also seems to think he's a. It also there's no romance so much. It's just sort of assumed that he will end up with a girl from his perspective, anyway. And of course he does. So Carswell tells him, unfortunately, you're going to die in 3 days because I've put this curse on you. It's at this point that, or when he gets home later, Dana Andrews realizes that he has indeed been slipped a rune. And as soon as he does that, the rune, is blown towards the fireplace. And appears to be attempting to self-destruct. There's a fire screen there, so it drops to the floor.
Now, honestly, I found that particular shot way more effective than it should have been.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's dangling on a string.
It doesn't need much of the way of effects. It just gets the job done.
And it's... Yeah, no, I agree. There's lots to like about the film. Then we go into a slightly...
Remember Hobart?
Yes, Hobart. So this is the catatonic guy. He was accused of murder. And he's got to go to their kind of family farm. I like this scene as well, because it's like...
It's a different film, but apart from that, yeah.
It feels like it's from a completely different film. But it's kind of slightly... So this family, it turns out... So they're farmers, so you kind of expect them to be a kind of rural... But it turns out they're this kind of weird, slightly... You don't quite know what they are, but there's a very culty feel to them. They're
believers.
Yeah, exactly. So they know what's happening. They know about Carswell. They at some point realize he has the parchment on him, and they are terrified. But they do give him, crucially, the whole point of the scene is that he is given permission to hypnotize the catatonic Hobart.
Because we must maintain our psychologist's ethics here.
there's some very unethical treatment here. Whether it was ethical in 57, I don't know. A film's set earlier, isn't it? It's slightly ambiguous when it's...
I don't think it's explicit, but I mean, the presence of the constellation suggests that it's meant to be near present time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair point. I think there's a scene at Stonehenge where he finds a similar rune on Stonehenge. Then we have a lovely scene with a séance. I love the medium. It's very over the top, very well played. Again, it doesn't kind of go the way you expect it to. It doesn't all go dark and creamy. The lights don't flash or anything. It could just be an idiot doing funny voices, but it's played sort of ambiguously, but the medium, he basically says, oh yeah, you're cursed and you're going to die, and he stumps out and says, what a load of rubbish.
Though, I guess this would be Roger's extraordinary popular delusions of the madness of Crowd's Corner, the mention of Bridie Murphy. who's right. basically entirely forgotten now, except by weirdos like me. This is about 54, I think, got started. The idea was that under hypnotic regression, this woman, American housewife, had recalled her life and death as an Irish girl in the previous century.
Yes.
And, you know, none of the... You know, this was comprehensively demolished
None of the so-called facts she had made any sense.
Lots of the details turned out to be details of the house she lived in when she was very little. But it was absolutely a craze, and there were pop songs about who were you in a past life, that kind of thing.
Yes,
and that's just fading as this film is being made, so it's actually a very topical thing to put in.
Yeah, I mean, the whole hypnosis, anyway, we won't go into sort of how even real is it, but in the context of this film, the people genuinely believe that hypnosis is the key to sort of someone's subconscious. I think the medium tells him that he's got to go to get the rare book to read the runes or something, so he's got to break into Carswell's house. It all goes a bit cat people there, because he breaks into the house, and he's attacked by a panther. Or is it a panther?
I picture the director saying, "He wrestles the cat!"
It's good. It's an effective...
Again, that whole sneaking about in the shadows is very effective.
Well, we are in the hands of a really good director who knows how to frame things to be, as he did perfectly with Cat People. It's, you know, there's no kind of giant teddy bears jumping on top of Dana Andrews or anything. It's a creepy scene. And again, it could be ambiguous. And then we get to, so he reads the runes, I think. Oh no, he doesn't read the runes, because he gets attacked by a panther. Mm-hmm. And then he...
Rescued by Carswell coming in and saying, oh, I knew you'd come. Yeah. I wouldn't leave through the woods if I were you, but he does anyway.
And then it almost, he thinks, attacked by a demon. We don't know. We see the visual cues that the demon is arriving that we saw before, but they don't turn into anything. Quite what that means, I'm not sure. Then we get the hypnosis scene, or the extremely unethical...
The drug-assisted hypnosis scene. Pentothal followed by amphetamines. Don't threaten me with a good time.
There's a lot of drug tech. In our last episode, we were talking about what's the drug? Scopolamine is the magic truth serum there. But here, they wheel out this chap who's been catatonic and is in an institution in front of an audience. Presumably, this is the convention they were going to already.
I guess.
Why they do it in front of an audience, I'm not sure. But
they're interested scientists and not at all poking the loony with a stick.
the idea is, to see if they can rouse him, ostensibly to see if they can rouse him from his catatonia using hypnosis or mesmerism.
And amphetamines.
How, I guess amphetamines would do it if nothing else. So they do manage to rouse this catatonic man.
And he basically explains how it works again.
Again, as if we didn't know, but basically...
He was given the parchment, he knew he was chosen to die, he managed to give it back to the person who'd given it to him, and then they died instead.
But the guilt of that...
That's the person whom he's accused of having murdered.
That's right, and the guilt of the whole situation, or just the overall experience, has led him into a catatonic state. And then he jumps out of a window.
This is where I think the film was not entirely clear, but I think the idea is that he sees the parchment that Holden has.
Yes.
And thinks that Holden is trying to give him the parchment.
Yes. So he cunningly avoids death by leaping out of a third-story window. There's got to be some explaining to do with the family after that. I don't know, in 57, perhaps he just signed a form and that was it. Sorry. The patient may jump out of a window during the procedure. Nowadays, I don't.
Oh yeah, we just added that in small print.
Anyway, no one seems terribly upset by this. At least of all Dana Andrews' character, but he is finally convinced that it would probably be in his best interest. Do you have to give it back to the person who gave it to you? I think that's the rule, isn't it?
They certainly don't suggest anybody else.
So he's finally convinced that he probably has to give the strip of paper back to Julian Carswell. Trying to find Carswell, I forget how he discovers, but he's on a train to Southampton for some reason.
And he's kidnapped the girl.
And hypnotised her as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Joanna's been kidnapped, so he's got to go and rescue Joanna. He makes it onto the train just in time, and we have the scene. This kind of black comedy scene where he keeps coming up with ways. He's like, oh, can I give you your umbrella? No, can I give you a coat? And Carswell knows exactly what he's trying to do, so he knows he's trying to hand him a parchment. Oh, can I show you this? And Carswell just keeps saying, no, you take it. Oh, no, I don't need the matches. Oh, no, thank you, I don't need. But it's a nice thing. Carswell at this point is panicking. Again, this is what I like about it. His whole plan might backfire. If Andrews is right there, Andrews' character, Dr. Holden, I should say, but it is Dana Andrews. If Holden is right there, then he's in danger as well. He needs to get out of here. He's panicking. And then the police show up. He's been to the police previously, Dr. Holden, and tried to explain that he has been cursed and he's going to be attacked by a giant demon. And that doesn't work.
Yes, sir, we have a department for people like you.
Follow me, sir. But they do turn up to come and get Holden because they, I think they are now, maybe they're upset with him killing Hobart, but either way, they are suspicious that he's means Carswell harm. So they sort of go to take him into protective custody, or arrest him. But at this point, he manages to slip Carswell the letter by putting it into Carswell's coat pocket. And as Carswell takes the coat and finds it, he realises he hasn't got very long. The parchment flies out the window and down the track.
Well, they've stopped at the station.
Yes, they've stopped at the station.
So he doesn't have to hurl himself off the train.
And at this point, it would have been beautiful if, like, a train had passed in front. We just heard some horrified cries and some sounds. And, obviously got hit by a train, although it wasn't the train on the other tracks. Something like that. But no, we have to see the demon go up, and we literally see him picking up Carswell and mangling him. So, impressive those special effects are for the time, it would have been way good. In my opinion, and the opinion of the director and the writer, it would have been way cool. In fact, it's all set up like that.
Mm.
That's what's going to happen, but then they insert the demon scene in. But it would have been beautiful if that was how it was done. But you were never quite sure. Was it a demon? Was he so worried that he ran out in front of a train?
To be fair to the spirit of M.R. James, I don't think he's intending that there be any doubt. Going in, you're reading an M.R. James story.
Oh, yes, yeah, it's always explicitly supernatural in M.R. James. But I think the director and the writer had the right idea. It would have been lovely. Mm. But without that, what did you think of it?
Well, I liked it a lot. And with the reservations, as we've expressed, and honestly, I would have preferred a different star. But,
yes.
I did enjoy it. Really for Carswell, Neil McGuinness, more than anything else.
I thought he was great. I looked him up. He was in a lot of other films, but nothing I'd particularly heard of. Oh, he did. Oh, didn't he crop up in a later film? But he was that I had seen. But he was a sort of Shakespearean actor. I was in Henry V. He did a load of stuff. But I didn't recognise him. He wasn't sort of film that was as very obvious. I may have seen him in Beckett. There's something about him that is kind of avuncular, charismatic, not cackling. He's just sort of playing by the rule. He's done this spell. He kind of understands it, but he's not the master. He's not like, he's very different to, Charles Grey, is it, in our Hammer horror film, The Devil Rides Out.
Charles Grey is very, very much the patriarchal, I know better than you.
Yes, and he's like the master of it all, and he's kind of unflappable until he isn't. Whereas this guy, he's learned how to do this stuff in a book, he does believe it, he knows how it works, but he's not like, he's not in control particularly, he's just trying this.
There is a bit where he's suggesting to his mum, you know, this lovely house that we live in, is it, I can't just stop doing the magic, you know?
Yeah, yeah, there's a reason we have all this, yeah, and, yeah, I think he's a great villain. I agree we could have had a much better foil than Dana Andrews. I don't know that the demon totally spoils it, and we shouldn't complain it for not being the film we want it to be, but when it's not the film the director wanted it to be, I think it would have been...
It would be interesting to try doing a different cut, just basically cutting out the demon scenes.
Yeah, I bet that would work fine, because they really are just sort of jammed in. I wonder if anyone's done that. But the problem is that kind of the demon, it's on the poster, it's the iconic,
part of it. Well, this is, of course, not the last butchery to be visited on this film. Because for the American release, it was trimmed from 96 down to 82 minutes. Retitled Curse of the Demon.
Oh yes, because, yes.
And it was the bottom half of a double bill with either The True Story of Lynn Stewart, which is basically a, biographical crime drama about a housewife who becomes a narcotics agent, or The Revenge of Frankenstein, which is the second of the Hammer Frankenstein films. We've previously watched the first one.
Oh, that's not a bad one, actually. I had watched that after the last one we saw, but, oh, so they cut out, I'm just reading, they cut out the visit to the farm, which again does feel a bit incongruous, and the bit of Stonehenge. So you probably, I guess you could live without those. They do seem a bit incongruous, but I like, the Stonehenge one seemed a bit crowbarred in, but I like the visit to the farm. It's creepy.
Well, it also suggests that it's not just Carswell and his book. There are other people who know this stuff.
That's what I like about it. It's almost like Carswell learned about it from this, read about it. I find him a way more interesting character than the extremely wooden Dana Andrews. I think it's very close to a masterpiece, but it's not, because of the flaws we've mentioned. Cat People, I think, in a way, I suppose you could argue, Jacques Tourneur he's trying to do pretty much exactly the same film, or the same style of film as Cat People, and so maybe I'm judging him slightly.
And it is one that has often been successful, but it is 15 years later, so...
Yes, it is. So he knows what he's doing. Maybe it would have been nice if he tried sort of a different idea, but what he does, this kind of ambiguous, creeping horror, I think is really good.
I'm reminded of a thing, I think it's in Stephen King's autobiography, that there is always the letdown when you see the monster, because, it's a 7-foot ant, but it could have been a 70-foot ant.
Yes. Totally agree. And, H.P. Lovecraft was the master of the unnameable and the unseeable, and don't describe it, just, like, it's much scarier to see the effects of what did this thing do to a human body than to actually see it kind of crunching up a human body. But that's what I think. But I agree with Stephen King and you. A very good film, though. I preferred it to The Devil Rides Out.
There's a sense of fun isn't quite the right term, because it's Carswell having the sense of fun.
Yes, he's the most fun one in it. As I say, Dana Andrews has this little comedy scene at the beginning, and then they don't do any more comedy because he's basically messing about with the airplane seat. But I found it slightly painful to watch.
Yes.
It's a shame, because I really like Dana Andrews after Laura, but he's just not the right fit for this film. It's probably not his fault either. I wonder, Vincent Price maybe would have been a better, a young Vincent Price.
Yeah, maybe.
But someone like, I don't know, a more everyman actor, maybe. I don't know. Not Dana Andrews, I'm afraid, who didn't endear it to me. But I love the story. I love the way the rules work. I love the playfulness with how true it is. It's just an interesting story. It would have worked better for me if I'd cared about the protagonist a bit more.
The version I would like is the one where he's just removed from it entirely, and it's just about Peggy.
Yes, exactly. It would have been I would have been cheering for her to make it through. Very good, though. It is exactly the sort of horror film I like. Don't watch colourised versions, kids. It's bad for your health. All right. Well, on that bombshell, I'm just going to slip this bit of paper across to you, Roger, and we'll leave it.
Oh, thanks. I've been waiting for that.